Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello, I'm Beth Espy and welcome to the 8th election constituency debate programme, which today focuses on the three people standing in Glenfeibre. We'll be hearing about their thoughts and views on local and national issues over the course of the next hour. But first, John Moss has been taking a look at the constituency itself.
The constituency of Glenfeibre, Glenfeibre, Glenfarba has a rather special hill inside its boundaries. Well, it is more of a mound, where the laws of the island have to be read aloud within a requisite time after their acceptance by Timbald, or they will fail. Promulgate is the antique word involved, but it's interesting to note that current planning laws passed on that Timbald Hill would probably prevent it even existing. One can imagine how planning in principle to bring earth from all over the island to build a hill would be viewed these days. What exactly would this hill be used for? What about parking, access to the hill, health and safety in mounting the hill in wet weather? But putting that to one side, apart from this, the island's omphalos, or navel, a central point, a word which sounds like a breed of prehistoric elephant and which I pompously throw into my conversation from time to time, the constituency spreads through to the sea surrounding Peel, which is not included in the package, of course, then rolls south to the flanks of the Round Table and up north to outside Kirkmichael. Its central point in more ways than one is St John's, the major conurbation. That aside, the voters will be coming from relatively small communities like Dorby and Glenmay. In fact, in the days when everything the western side of the mountain chain was reckoned on as north, then the whole shooting match would have been a northern constituency. Apart from how you pronounce the name, tomato or tomato, the second bit of the name, the Farber Faber bit, is, we are told, obscure, and is probably one of the bedrock names bequeathed to us by the non-Aryan race or races which inhabited our islands before the coming of the Celts. Fascinating, eh? How the winter evenings must fly by. The constituency has had two long-serving members in modern times, Ian Anderson from 1966 to 1982, and his successor, after Mr. Anderson, Walter Gilby. That's after Mr. Anderson went to Legco. Mr. Gilby from 1982 to 2001. Both were substantial landowners, a farmer in Mr. Anderson's case. And that reflected the rurality of the constituency, if that's not a word it is now. Yes, many of the inhabitants are not so much middle of the road as middle of the field. One area that's always been not so much a bone of contention as a whole skeleton rattling away is Foxdale. The Deads nearby are Challigan, once nearly a site for landfill. Housing in Foxdale, it's spread across the adjoining areas. And in nearby St John's, the Western Amenity site, recently the object of protest after two long-term staff were definitely not recycled. So there you have it. Who is the man to lead this green and pleasant land into the next 5 years? Well, dear voter, that's up to you.
John Moss. Well, now let's meet the candidates. They are David Anderson, the current health minister, who's seeking election for the third time, Geoffrey Boot, who unsuccessfully contested the seat back in 2006, and Matthew Wadsworth, a first-time challenger. Each of them will now have up to 2 minutes to speak uninterrupted about whatever they like. We'll take them in alphabetical order, and so start with David Anderson.
Good evening. It's been an honour to represent Glenfeibre for the past 10 years and to be at the centre of government and the Council of Ministers for the past 7 years. As Minister of Education, Transport and, more recently, Health. It is where the main policies are brought to Tynwald are formed, and I am privileged to be in such a strong position to influence that has only benefited not just the constituency of Glenfeibre, but the island and its economy, and the high quality of life that we too often take for granted. Over the past 5 years, the island has faced some difficult situations that have been out of the island's area of control and influence. However, despite the global economic downturn that has dramatically affected our immediate neighbours who have been in recession and have had high unemployment, our economy has continued to grow by 30% in the last 5 years and unemployment is at only 2%. The Islandman ship has stood up well to the choppy waters we are experiencing, and it is quite remarkable that what has been described by some candidates as the worst government they can remember has delivered what other jurisdictions could only dream of achieving, and without any national debt and with large reserves. This puts us in a strong position to face the challenging financial period ahead of us. Because of our successful economy, we have been able to deliver high quality public services, often taken for granted. It is clear that to continue to provide frontline services, we will need to deliver some of those services in more cost-effective ways. and areas of government spending that have been protected because we were in a better financial position to do so will have to be more closely examined and all options of delivery explored. The key to continued delivery for high public service is to continue to put maximum effort into developing the economy. To do this, the new Department of Economic Development was formed and is actively engaged in attracting high-quality businesses that also provide a broader range of job opportunities, thus seeking to keep full unemployment.
David Anderson, thank you. We now turn to Geoffrey Boot.
Good evening, Beth. Good evening, listeners. The 2006 election was a close-run thing for me, but there are no prizes for coming second. So, frustratingly, I've had to sit on the sidelines for the last 5 years and watch things unravel. And sadly, how they've unravelled. We're all going to be losers as a result. Our government, unfortunately, has seemed content on occasion to bask in the rosy glow of yesteryear, failing to recognise what's happening in the bigger world. We've adopted more and more UK and European legislation, frequently not exercising our independence. We also seem to have lost all credible contact at political level in the UK. Take the reciprocal health agreement, written off by the Council of Ministers, but saved by public opinion and political intervention in the UK. Now the devastating renegotiation of our VAT agreement with no plan B. Despite knowing for nearly 4 years that we faced huge cuts, no provision was made until recently, and spending has continued unabated. The next Tin Ward has a one-off opportunity to fix things, or our reserves will be gone, and with them the tools, and by this I mean the money, to provide all the good things that we cherish: health, education, law and order. We desperately need change to rebalance our economy, and as a matter of priority, rebuild those political links with the UK so we can preempt future attacks on our prosperity. If I'm elected, I'll start with the basics: rebuilding the local community links with better and more open communication, as well as working with our local commissioners. I will, however, not shrink from addressing the serious national issues head-on using my extensive business and political experience. It's vital that we protect the ethos of the Isle of Man and our safe, prosperous, caring community. This will require people with experience, enthusiasm and determination. I believe that I can provide that.
Geoffrey Boot, thank you. And finally, Matthew Wadsworth.
Good evening. The Isle of Man is at a unique point in its history. We have come through the last 5 years of change and economic change that's been dramatic throughout the world. Luckily, the island's fared well. I think that's by more luck than design. We are now facing an unprecedented future of budgets, reviews following the change in the Common Purse Agreement. What we need is an open government with honesty, integrity and accountability. We need a set of people in government with the skills and the passion and drive to change the island and move it forward, not only for our current generation but future generations as well. We need to be able to view the island on a local level and an international level. The position of the island has changed, and we are now playing in a global marketplace, and we need people with the skills and the business acumen to play in that arena.
Matthew Wadsworth, thank you very much. Well, let's find out now a little bit more about the reasons you're standing for election. And Geoffrey Boot, as I mentioned, and you also mentioned, you contested the seat in Glenfeibre 5 years ago, but when you didn't get that, you turned your attention to UK politics. You became the chairman of Sandgate Parish Council. You talk a lot about your commitment to the Isle of Man, so why not stay and look at getting a seat on the local commissioners instead of going to the UK?
Well, when you don't win an election, you have no political clout, and really that's where you are. And after the last election, I'd cleared my diary presumptuously, and I decided that I would have some holiday time and then have a look around for opportunity. Unfortunately, a lot of the opportunities that I'd been exploiting or using or been working with were available to me again, so I took those up, and in May of the following year I was asked if I would stand in Sandgate, as you rightly point out. Now, I had thought about standing for the commissioners, but some of the commissions were my supporters at the previous election, and they didn't really want to stand against them, and I think that would have been counterintuitive. So I took the challenge, and I told the people of Sandgate, or my people that wanted me to stand, that I would do 4 years, one term as a councillor, and I did that. And stood down in May of this year. My commitment is here, my main business is here, but sometimes opportunities come up elsewhere and the experience has been very good.
Couldn't it be argued, though, that maybe your political ambition in the Isle of Man really centres on leaving a legacy in your name?
I don't know where that one comes from.
Well, it comes from because you've written about the idea of leaving a lasting memorial in relation to Sandgate. And in that article, you say, and I quote, "I'm a Sandgate man and I want my name to endure in Sandgate." How committed, then, can you say you are to the Isle of Man?
Do you read Terry Kringle's column?
I appreciate it's tongue-in-cheek, yes, but you see
that
the point
was done
I'm getting
as a spoof column for a local publication and nothing less. And if you read the series that I did for them that they commissioned, they all have a funny theme, and that was one of the themes, that's all.
So you say your commitment to the Isle of Man is...
Absolutely. I've been here nearly 30 years. My main business is based here, and, you know, this is where I live.
In both your manifesto and during your election interview on Mandate on Manx Radio, you said if you were elected, you'd give up the majority of your off-island commitments, 95% of them, you said, in Mandate. What's the 5% you won't give up?
Well, there's one position I hold on the UK Air Prox Board, which is useful, and it's a one-day commitment per month, and I would like to retain that. Apart from that, my UK business connections will be confined to my personal family business, so everything else will go. And in the nicest possible way, people that I work with are prepared for that to happen.
OK, Matthew Wadsworth, in your manifesto, you say it's time for a fresh approach provided by a new generation of MHKs. In your case, that means someone with no direct political experience at all.
That's not the case. I have a wide variety of experience, whether it be through Treasury committees for charities. I have done council activities in the UK before I moved to the Isle of Man. And anybody that's worked in a large organisation or a blue-chip organisation will realise politics happen in an office and within a management structure.
But I can think of at least one person who was elected for the first time in 2006 and talked about how long it took for them to get their feet under the table. And if what everyone's saying is true about the challenges ahead, especially in the immediate coming years, we haven't really got all the time in the world to nurse newbies through the political process of learning.
You don't, and that's where you have to go away and learn any structures and processes as you would in a business environment. If you look through the financial crisis that's happened since 2007-2008, the whole marketplace in the financial sector has changed, and there's people like myself that are commercial analysts. You have to adapt and change.
But you also have to understand the parliamentary processes.
Yes, you do.
And you understand them well enough, you think?
I think I do, yes. I did actually study law in my previous life before I became a banker, so I'm well aware of different processes and the legislative procedures as well.
David Anderson, how have you lived up to your manifesto pledges of 2006?
Well, I, Beth, as you can see from my previous manifestos, don't promise anything I can't deliver. I always work and seek to work with a team. I think I've demonstrated that over the last several years. I've been included in the last three administrations as a minister in different areas. And I think my track record speaks for itself in that I'm somebody that works from within rather than from outside and trying to criticise. We have a lot of people within Tynwald that do that. I believe in putting my shoulders to the wheel, and I believe my track record actually shows that.
Well, when I looked through your manifesto from the last election, one of your main concerns was, and I quote, "the scale of some of the schemes we've embarked upon in the past, capital schemes must be clearly scrutinised." Now, it is very interesting that one of the schemes being highlighted as an example of a waste of money of the past 5 years was one you were responsible for as a then Transport Minister. That's namely the Richmond Hill Improvement Scheme at a cost of £3 million.
2.8, actually, Beth.
Well, nearly £3 million. Pounds. Yeah. How have you improved scrutiny? Then.
Okay, I believe that was a very important scheme, and I can also demonstrate an example of where we've actually looked at capital schemes and improved things going forward. One would be the change to the strategy for the Irish scheme, where we moved from an all-island scheme to a regional scheme.
But
now, I'll come back to your specific now on Richmond Hill. Richmond Hill is not on the TT course, as you know. However, despite that, it is the highest black spot area in the Isle of Man. My professional has said that there's several reasons why that was happening. At the same time, we had not long before that had a machine over that actually analysed the substructure of the roads, which confirmed that the foundations of that road were extremely bad, and that was why the camber of the road was wrong. The road then had to be reconstructed to save these accidents that were happening in different parts on that road. I believe that in 2 years' time, we'll see the benefit of the accidents having dropped. And that has already been demonstrated in two places in the TT course that were done. Windycorn and Brandish were improved. They were top of the radar at that time. They've dropped right off the radar now. And I think 2 years' time, you'll be able to see the statistics that will prove 2.8 million was very well spent.
OK, but what's been the reaction to that spending on the doorstep as you've been going around Glenfaber?
I think I've had to explain the rationale behind it, and I've been very happy to do that. And I haven't been able to explain to you in this short interview, but basically there were two or three other problems in that area. One, the overtaking lane stopped right at the bend at the top of the hill. That was creating accidents. The entrance to the Home for Esperold Horses was on another bend.
And there were issues around the size of the car park that's been left for that.
I explained that as well, because the access to the Home for Esperold Horses, which was being put in the right place away from the bend, they have had that coming up through the car park. And it also gave the department access to use that while they were doing the works. And I'm sure, Beth, in 2 years' time, when we see those accident statistics and how much it's improved, it'll say it's as successful as Windycorn
Absolutely,
and Brandish was.
Does this not also bring another question that I've asked ministers in the past about being in high office, compromising the way you can represent your people?
No, I believe it's very good value for money. We took that scheme to Tynwald, and a vast majority of Tynwald members actually backed it because they heard the arguments and went with it.
Well, I just want to talk about the issues of spending again. And Geoffrey Boot, when you were asked about the issue in the Manx Radio questionnaire, you said on the one hand that the last government had spent money prolifically without hard scrutiny, yet on the other hand, you criticised the austerity that's been imposed on the working people. Now, you can't have it both ways. Surely austerity measures show the government is actually reining in spending in the face of economic pressure.
Well, they have started to rein in spending over the last, well, since the last budget. But prior to that, bearing in mind that the Council of Ministers and the Chief Minister probably had notice of this VAT reduction nearly 4 years ago, this is the first budget that's really reflected what's
happening. Did
you
have notice of it four years ago?
No, we didn't have notice of it 4 years ago. It was when they came back 2 years ago, it was the first notice we had of it. And we need to explain that agreement was very beneficial to the Isle of Man. The UK government has got itself into a real mess. It's got huge debt. It's lugged every hidey-hole to scrape money from. And they renegotiated it. When they did it the first time, it wasn't done very scientifically. And therefore, they looked at, in the 8-month period up until the second time, they looked at the mechanism of it. That's been changed now, and it's more fair as far as the UK is concerned.
Geoffrey Boot.
Well, I don't necessarily take that as the truth, because if you go back just 2 years, they knew long before that that the negotiations were taking place. And it was pretty obvious that they were negotiating to reduce the amount, not increase it. And what annoys me and angers a lot of people is that they seem to have gone into these negotiations without a plan B. If you don't know what abrogation costs, how do you negotiate something? And I take David's point. He is right. There was a failing UK government that was short of money, and we looked like an easy target. And indeed, it seems that we have been a fairly easy target. They view it
as... That was in their right to come back and negotiate. They could do that. And the other option at the last stage of this second time is they would walk away from the agreement, which obviously would not be beneficial for the Isle of Man.
Geoffrey, can I just ask you, you do talk a lot about your UK political links and you talked in your introduction about rebuilding the political contact with the UK. If you had been the MHK for Glenfaber at the time the VAT negotiations were going on, would we have had a different outcome?
I can't say that you would, Beth, because I wouldn't have been part... Well, I may have been part of a council of ministers.
But you may have been able to use your contacts.
But I do have those contacts, and they undoubtedly lead to an informal discussion, which we don't seem to have had. I can't say that it would have made any difference or not, but it may well have...
Believe me, this was being driven by HM Treasury. You know, it wasn't political. It was taken above... You know, the UK have got a huge national debt. We have not. They had an agreement with us. They sought to renegotiate that for their own ends. They've been able to do that. I think what we've ended up is a fairer agreement. We've done very well in the past.
Matthew Wadsworth, I want to bring you in here. I mean, you want the Isle of Man to be more assertive in its relationship with the UK. How exactly?
There's a number of things that we can do. You know, we seem to forget and look at the island on a very small scale. Financially and globally, we are a huge powerhouse. If you look through the Foot report and look at the contribution financially we make to the UK economy, which the UK Treasury Select Committee admit if they closed the Isle of Man down, would not go to the UK. That gives us huge bargaining power and a huge place to stand and say, actually, this is who we are. We're not a small island. We are a powerhouse within the financial world.
That's a nice opinion for us to have, but it takes quite something to convince other people of that.
It's fact. You know, you look at the figures, the UK Foot Review, that's Treasury Select Committee, not the Isle of Man government, the UK government recognise our financial importance to the UK economy. When you look at, you know, the reciprocal health agreement, we pay, I believe, is it £10.4 million to the UK, approximately?
Not quite that much.
Or thereabouts, according to the Pink Book. You know, that's the Northwest UK's GP provision for the whole of the Northwest UK. That gives us an actual bargaining power to say, you know, we're in a stronger position than we actually let on sometimes.
Mr. Anderson, with regard to VAT, on your own website, you said the changes to the share of the VAT pool gave the island no option for negotiation. Now, that would seem to go against what the Treasury Minister said. She described it as almost 10 months of detailed and robust negotiations.
Yes. Can I just... That is the first... that was talking about the first negotiation, not the recent one. OK. I believe what we've got on the table now is a very good deal for the Isle of Man. I know it's a huge reduction in what we've had. But I believe because the Isle of Man economy has been so strong over the last 5 years in particular, that's been highly criticised here, that enables us to be in a good position to actually go forward through the choppy waters that we're in.
And what we're hearing again a lot in this election, Geoffrey Boot, is a need to reduce the Isle of Man's reliance on VAT. How is that going to be done?
Well, I'd just like to go back on an earlier point about politicians and political contact. I do quite a lot of lobby work in the UK, and having political contacts is where it's all at. When we run into the buffers with aviation legislation, with the CAA or EASA, we go political. And I think both Matthew and David have made the point, really. We need to let UK politicians know what the Isle of Man's about and where we're coming from.
But just how beneficial is it going to be for the island to have your connections with people who are just on the fringe of English politics?
It's not just me. I think it needs to have people that have more contact at ministerial level. We ought to build those contacts. I go to party conference after party conference where the Gibraltis are there, their chief ministers there, they hold receptions, they have a Gibraltar Day in London, the Falkland Islanders are there, but we never see the Manx politicians.
Well, I'd like to counter that. Manx politicians have been at party conferences, and Geoffrey is well aware of that. They're not always at a table sitting in the front, in the foyer. They have meetings arranged in the background, and that's the way business is done. But I must say that, you know, in the past, the Isle of Man government has represented themselves in these areas. But we must be realistic. UK politicians, when they've got a problem, they're not going to take pity on the Isle of Man. They're going to do what is best for their constituents, not what's best for the Isle of Man.
Meetings in the backgrounds doesn't sound terribly open and transparent.
Well, sometimes things are achieved more with politicians in the UK by having meetings not in the public foyer, but in the background.
I don't disagree that meetings in the background do work sometimes, but I take the Gibraltis as a good example. Nearly every major conference, they have a stand in the conference hall, and bearing in mind there are I don't know how many MPs, they see as many MPs as they can. They hold a major reception where all the leading members of government are invited. And the last Conservative Party conference, nearly everyone was there apart from the Prime Minister, and the Chief Minister there is talking to them all, and it's good for business, and they know who they're talking to then.
OK, I just want to go back to the question that you didn't answer, Geoffrey Boot, about how we're going to reduce the Isle of Man's reliance on VAT returns now. If you can briefly give us your ideas.
Well, it's going to be a difficult time, and we've got a difficult 5 years ahead of us because we've got nearly 40% of our government budget vanishing in 3 years.
So how are you going to deal with it?
Well, it's going to be a gradual process. First of all, we need to maintain a very friendly regulatory and taxation network or format for business so that we can continue to attract business and be business friendly. But on the other side, we're very top heavy in the public sector, civil service, and we've got to start looking at ways of reducing that. And the scope and sort of reach of government has got to be reduced over a period of time.
So you're talking about cuts then?
There will inevitably be some cuts. You can't avoid it. There may be some tweaking of taxation as well, but it'll be a gradual process.
OK, Matthew Wadsworth, what are your policies?
I think we've got to systematically go through government. There is still, despite the reviews that have gone on already, a huge amount of waste within government, you know, whether it's through centralisation of services. There's processes that just are paper-based and happen because they've always happened that way.
I would just point out that a lot of that is already happening. I mean, you talk about wanting to see an amalgamation of duplicated processes. Well, HR, finance, that's been done. Issues relating to estates is in progress. We're talking about small added value here. What are the big...
It's not small added value. For example, my wife works for social services. Month in, month out, she signs a bit of paper, which is her timesheet. A manager gets in a car and drives it across Douglas. You know, we're paying for staff to drive bits of paper around the capital. It's a waste of time, it's a waste of money. You aggregate those up and that delivers significant savings. And it's only when you get to that point that you can then start reviewing the scope of government, because you don't know how much budget you've got to save until you've saved as much as you can.
Isn't there a danger that we're going to spend the next 5 years reviewing everything and doing nothing?
But that's where you need sound business practices. You need people that understand the processes you need to go through to review what's going on within government. You need a cohesive, engaged workforce. There is very much a them and us attitude within government at the moment. People are feeling disenfranchised. Being a banker, I'm well aware of the banker bashing. At the moment, we have civil service bashing. We have a lot of good people working very hard for the Isle of Man. We need to recognise that, build on it and move forward. We need to review our economy. We need to look at how we can maximise the revenue we're getting from the VAT sharing agreement and the common purse agreement. We need to look at new markets and work hard to develop them and move forward.
David Anderson, I'd say again that the big savings are really only going to come by making tough policy decisions. What decisions are you prepared to make?
Well, there's one bigger issue, Beth, that I covered in my introductory remarks, and that is the economy. Over the last 5 years, and it's not been widely accepted this, that the economy has grown by 30%. That's a fantastic achievement. Now, the government has now formed a new department, the Department of Economic Development, to continue keeping the foot on the pedal, if you like, and increasing new businesses coming to the island. If we can do the same in the next 5 years as we have in the last 5 years, that will more than compensate for the VAT reduction. However, we have to do other things as well. We have to look at the scope of government, which we haven't tackled yet.
Parts
of it have, but we have to go further. We have to look at the delivery of our services. The private sector can deliver services in a more cost-effective way than government can, but we must protect our frontline services. In order to do that, we have to take some pain in some other areas.
Now, these are the benefits and luxuries which you suggest might not be able to be sustained going forward. I mean, can you just tell us, though, exactly what you see those benefits and luxuries to be?
Well, we have a fantastic education system here on the Isle of Man. We've been able to give fantastic support to higher education in the students going to the UK. Things like that will have to be pared down. We can't do it to the same level as we've done in the past.
So how would you see it being pared down?
That's just one example of many examples in one government department.
How would you see it being pared down?
If we're going to reduce the amount of support we give to students, we've got to put something else in place, like it is in the UK. However, you know, there are other areas of government that we need to look at putting out to the private sector. Private sector can quite often do things in a more economical way than the government, but there are certain sectors, service deliveries that must be protected and the government must deliver.
Okay, final word on this, Geoffrey Boot. What do you see as the luxuries that we can't afford going forward?
I would go back a little bit on that and say that we've still got this issue of the VAT agreement and the abrogation and what it would cost us. And I think that issue is not clear yet. And I think there's room to maybe open the issue up or look at it in more detail, because I still don't know, and I don't know anyone that does know, and I don't think government knows what the cost to us is if we went it alone. I'm not saying we should.
I think the cost would be mass exodus of some of our industries in the UK, and that would have a very detrimental effect on the economy in the long term.
Well, does that happen in Jersey and Guernsey?
We would have to put something else in place to replace the VAT, if you like. We'd have to put up barriers that would be an impediment to local industries trading through the UK. They've already told us this. You know, we've got some fantastic high-tech industries here now in the Isle of Man because they can trade in the same VAT area as the UK. They haven't got these barriers. They haven't got these hurdles. And so that's just one issue. And they have a lot of high employment, high-value employment within them.
I don't disagree with that, David, but if you look at other jurisdictions like Jersey, their general sales tax, which is our VAT equivalent, has just gone from 5 to 7%. So there are advantages there, and they're managing to balance their budget, although they're having problems as well. And we're now charging 20% VAT, and that's unprecedented.
Jersey would bite their hands off to have the situation we have with the UK, and they've tried to get that and they failed.
Okay, final note on this, Matthew.
I was going to agree with exactly what David says. You know, the level of service provision in Jersey compared to the Isle of Man is nowhere near, and it's not just aggregation. You've then got to look at the EEA and our access into that. You know, if we go down the Norway model, you're then looking at percentages of GDP paid to the EEA. It's not just a simple case of going, we want to have our cake and eat it.
OK, you're listening to Manx Radio's Election Constituency Debate Programme, and we'll be back in a couple of moments.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Welcome back. This is Manx Radio's 8th Constituency Debate Programme. Today, we're with the candidates standing for election in Glenfeber. They are David Anderson, Geoffrey Boot and Matthew Wadsworth. Well, let's talk about another key election issue now, particularly relevant given your ministerial portfolio, Mr Anderson, and that's health. In the budget, government's prioritised spending in this department, but undoubtedly money could be saved in this area. How efficiently is the Department of Health actually run?
The Department of Health is looking very closely at its budget to try and make more efficiencies within it. And we've had several examples over the last 18 months. Every time you do one for those efficiencies, it has an effect on people. But you have to try and explain it's for the best and getting more throughput, if you like. I was criticised for because we closed two podiatry clinics, for example, one in Laxey and one in Peel. Those clinics were not fit for purpose. We'd had to spend exceptional amount of money to bring them up to the current acceptable level for NHS podiatry clinics. But at the same time, we had a state-of-the-art building on Westmoreland Road, the Central Community Centre there. And by actually having that centre there, we could actually have more throughput because the staff weren't going backwards and forwards and losing time on the road. And I'm pleased to say that through doing that, the waiting list for people to go to podiatry has actually dropped. And people that actually can't access the service can have home calls as well.
Mr Boot, in your electors survey, you say that health was a number one priority. And in your Manx Radio questionnaire, you make reference to the continuing problems in the health service. What are those problems?
There's lots of problems in the health service, but I am glad to say, having spoken to a number of people employed in the health service, that, as David said, some cuts and some economies are starting to feed through. But there are miserly cuts, and that there are other things that can be tackled more head-on.
If we go back to what Matthew Wadsworth actually said before, is there that we start seeing more added value?
Yes. Well, I would like to just pick up on the podiatry clinic, because who said that the building was not fit for purpose? Because I know a lot of people in the constituency that use that clinic, and you're right that they're probably shorter waiting lists now because some of them are not going to Douglas. They're simply not going to Douglas. And if they qualify for home visits and some qualify for free transport, I can't see the saving there. And what do you need in a clinic for podiatry care except just a room?
One of the difficulties we have is actually getting the trained staff at that level, and you know, we have to make best use of those staff, and to have them in one centre you get more efficiency, you have more throughput of patients through that. And if we're going to make any savings at all, we have got to make hard decisions, and that's what this is all about, making hard decisions. We've been able to introduce other things in the health service. We've been able to introduce bowel cancer screening within our budget. You know, this is a killer on the Isle of Man. We've got to put things into perspective. Bowel cancer screening will actually save people at least 6 lives a year because people are being identified earlier. It's very preventable when treated. We have to make these hard decisions that might inconvenience some people in some areas, but they will save lives in other areas.
Well, you talk about hard decisions, and Geoffrey Boot, again, you were less than impressed with the handling of the breast care specialist post, but surely in that situation, Mr Anderson, in his capacity as minister, stuck to his political guns despite the pressure. He made an unpopular decision that in the long term was going to maintain services at a more acceptable level at the hospital.
Well, whatever the rights and wrongs are of the post and the description, the way it was handled was really bad PR. And if there's one subject that's attracted more correspondence in this campaign than anything, it is just that.
Was it bad PR, though? Because, I mean, speaking from a media point of view, the Department of Health was always completely open and ready to answer questions on this.
Well, I'm not saying they didn't, but the locum has gone. And I'm now coming across people that are in mid-treatment plans and they're suddenly having to be referred across. And I know that radiotherapy is only available across. Mm-hmm. I'm coming across new people who are diagnosed and they're being sent across. Now, we're spending the money on that side now when we were spending the money on this side with a locum. Mm.
Before I just come to you, Mr. Anderson, I'm just interested, Matthew Wadsworth, if you'd been in Tim Ward during the debate on the breast care specialist, how would you have voted?
That's a difficult question. I think in the circumstances, it's a very emotive issue. I think David has made the right decision for our health service and our future. But I also agree with David. I think the level of, Geoffrey, I think the level of communication to the electorate was poor, and that's what let what was actually a very sensible decision down. And that was electioneering by other members as well, that jumped on a bandwagon and distorted the image of what is a very emotive issue.
I mean, Mr. Anderson, you didn't really seem to be much of a people person when it came to this issue. You didn't give an inch despite the overwhelming calls for a dedicated specialist. How much will that reluctance cost you, do you think?
Well, time will tell, Beth, won't it? I believe we made the right decisions for the right reasons. We had a locum in place. We put a locum in place to replace Mr. Clegg's one part of his speciality for a short period of time. When we had introduced call and recall, we expected a peak of people presenting. That happened. That was predicted to fall. It fell. So therefore, we then developed a business plan to put a permanent person in place. And I'm delighted to say we have now a lady appointed, and the press release will be out tomorrow. We can't release her name yet because all the pre-employment checks have to be done. But this person will actually be performing more work on the island than the locum did. She's highly experienced, and I would like to counter what Geoffrey said. We haven't been sending people off island because we can't do it here. In the meantime, we've had a locum in place for the locum.
But some people, Geoffrey said, haven't been happy with the treatment they received.
Some of the people weren't happy with the treatment they were receiving before as well, but I can't really say, go into individual circumstances. But what we have now is a better service than we had before. We haven't got a locum, we've got a permanent person that is dedicated to themselves living on the island, and that's important. We have somebody living on the island. Hopefully, just after the new year, that person will be in place and on the island, and we'll be performing procedures that haven't been performed on the island before.
Seems to be a good news story then, Geoffrey Boot.
I'm really glad to hear that, and I'm sure many of the constituents will be as well, but it doesn't address the issue of how it was dealt with initially. And as I said, whatever the rights and wrongs, it was dealt with very poorly.
Well, can I just follow up on that, Beth? Because these things sometimes get out of all perspective, and things are blown up for other people's political ends, and that's what happened in this situation. And very often we put a press release out to cover what we're doing, and usually that actually explains and it's very well received. However, when it's politically hijacked, if you like, things are distorted, and it takes us a while to get back on track to get the balance back into the public arena.
Okay, Orla, I want to look at another issue now that has both local and national implications, and that's farming and agriculture. It's something you've all mentioned during your election campaign. What's the future for the Manx farming industry? Matthew Wadsworth.
I think we have a lot of disgruntled farmers at the moment. If you talk to them, there's wide varying views on the countryside care scheme. I think for some farmers they will be better off, some will be worse off. And while it's a good basis, I don't think it's in the position we need it to be. We need to look at relinking some of the countryside care scheme to production, not necessarily wholly, but we need to look at that. That'll then help with the meat processing plant and ensuring throughput there. And we need to look at investment in farming. Something that we no longer do is invest in our agriculture industry.
I just want to pick up on the meat plant, because really many people say that the future of the agricultural industry really hinges on having a viable meat plant. Can you give us the benefit of your experience in business, Mr. Wadsworth, and tell us how you would make it work?
It needs to be competitive in the marketplace, and at the moment it's not. And when you look at the meat processing plant, it's not just about the economics of the meat processing plant, but it's also the economics of the food market on the island. Now, we've lost meat degradation. That has an impact, and depending on your view, it's either a positive impact or a negative impact. As a constituent and electorate, that has had no impact on my life. It hasn't reduced meat prices. It hasn't changed anything. So we need to look at how we protect our farming industry. And I know there's economic rules about that from Europe, but we can look at doing import levies like the US have done and look at different ways of providing the same service.
Geoffrey Boot, you say you'd look at ways of stimulating production. What are your ideas?
Well, it's unfortunate that Matthew wasn't at the NFU meeting like David and I last night.
He was.
Sorry, Matthew. I didn't see you. But agriculture is an important bedrock of the island. I mean, our countryside and everything is shaped by agriculture. The CARE, or Countryside Care Scheme, is basically the single farm payment system that has been operational in the UK.
I'm just asking, though, how you would stimulate production.
Well, I think we've got to recouple production to subsidy, and that needs careful consultation with farmers to find out how that's done, because I've been around the constituency and I've talked to a lot of farmers, and I've also talked to the meat processing plant personnel, and there's no doubt about it, production is falling, and if we don't recouple somehow, we're going to lose the meat processing plant, the value added that comes from that.
Much is said about encouraging young people to stay in farming. I mean, David Anderson, you're from a farming background. You kept that up in your early career, but your children weren't persuaded to work on the family farm. They both work and live in London, I understand. So how do you get young people into the industry?
Well, my brother is very much involved in agriculture still and runs the family farm. But just going back to a point that's made before, Matthew was very much at that meeting last night, and he was there to the end as well. So let's just put that on record. I believe there are a lot of young people within the industry that are very, very keen, and we have to develop the incentives for young farmers to get involved, not just to get involved, to actually get on the first two or three steps of that ladder. But I do disagree, because I think the Countryside Care Scheme has to run its course. There might be some tinkering to do, but we must realise that we have to have something like that if we want to market into the UK, into Europe. We have to be on the same levels, otherwise it will be seen as discriminatory, and our products will be banned from the UK and from Europe. So we have to have a system in place that actually is comparable to the UK. The Countryside Care Scheme has its critics. Farmers have different opinions on it. I believe that we should back the National Farmers Union approach to this, to keep with the Countryside Care Scheme, but to tweak it for the advantage of the farmers of the Isle of Man.
Geoffrey Boot?
Well, I'm interested to hear David's comments on this, because I received his manifesto 2 days ago, and there is nothing in the manifesto about agriculture, and I thought that David would be a proponent of the agricultural system and
Well, a lot of the constituents know my views on agriculture very well, Geoffrey. I was vice president, as you know, of the National Farmers Union, and what I've said to people at the end of my manifesto, if there are any issues that I haven't covered, I'm more than happy to go back and to talk to people about that, because you cannot cover everything in a manifesto that's readable to the average constituent.
Well, I think a manifesto ought to be a comprehensive document of the way you see things going forward. And as you've been a minister for nearly 10 years...
Seven years, but
10 years you've been in an MHK.
That's right.
I would have thought that the manifesto may have been a bit more definitive about where you thought things were going.
Well, quite clearly, I'm prepared to... I've got several public meetings arranged. I'm prepared to give my views at those. I've been on the doorstep probably for longer than you have, Geoffrey, and I come across people ask me all sorts of questions and all sorts of topics. I could never cover them in a manifesto, but my heart, my family are in agriculture on the island, and will continue to be so.
We're just going back to David's comments on the present scheme. You say it should run its course. just what is its course? Because we talked last night about 2012 being a review date, and we know that the UK or European system, CAP, is being reviewed next year. Are we talking about a comprehensive review next year?
The departments have gone out for consultation on this. As you know, the system of support is changing from direct support to an acreage support with an historic window in between. I believe the farming community have some confidence in that. They know exactly what they're going to get in the next 7 or 8 years. And I think it's very important that the department or DEFA actually stick to the support levels on this. Otherwise, it will take confidence away from the industry.
Matthew Wadsworth, how well do you understand the agricultural industry?
I have a basic understanding of the agricultural industry and the issues we've been facing. It's a steep learning curve for me, obviously, in a financial background. One thing I do understand is farmers are businessmen at the end of the day, and the numbers have got to add up and they've got to make money. And one thing we seem to be forgetting about in all these discussions is actually we have an ageing farming population, we have no incentive for young farmers to come through, we have no investment and support from the government in modernisation of our production processes, and if we don't address it soon, in 10 years we won't be discussing the countryside care scheme and subsidies, we will be discussing what to do with our empty farms.
There are processes for supporting the manufacturing side of the industry through grants.
OK, well, I just want to talk about something else, another buzzword during any election, especially this one. We've sort of hinted at it earlier in the programme. Openness, transparency, it's something all three of you mentioned. Now, David Anderson, you say much of the information that would be open to inspection if we had freedom of information legislation would be of little interest and cost a lot to provide. I mean, surely that is just your opinion.
It might be my opinion. This is one issue that's only been raised twice and on doorsteps on the way round. I did support the introduction of the Freedom of Information Bill, but I believe we have a regulatory framework that allows most of this information to be available now.
There's a framework, but there isn't actual legislation.
There's not legislation, but there's a code of practice in force which is operated, and I think we can count on one hand the amount of times people have been turned down for information, because some of that information is commercial confidentiality, if you like.
But there are 85 countries around the world with freedom of information legislation, and you're saying we don't need it.
What I'm saying is I don't think we need it at any cost. My understanding was this was going to cost a couple of million pounds to roll out if Jersey's experience is anything to go by. If that is the case, and there's another hit to be taken on the health service, something like that, I know where my vote would go. But I think we have to realise, why is the Isle of Man in such a strong position as it is? Because we don't show all our cards to all our neighbours all the time.
Is that because things are happening that you don't want the public to know?
Not at all. The best things are happening for the Isle of Man, and we need to keep our cards very close to our chest at times.
I mean, Geoffrey Boot, it's fair to say that on some occasions there is a need for confidentiality, as Mr. Anderson said, when we're considering commercial sensitivities, for example. So how would you deal with that, given your promise to the constituents of Glenfarne to keep them informed?
I will keep them informed. I mean, if we're looking at local communication, apart from freedom of information, I believe in newsletters and a modern, updated website, and something that's been sadly missing in the constituency over the last 5 years. But to go back to the Freedom of Information Act, this was something that was tabled during the last government's term, and in fact I responded to the consultation, and the Act as proposed is not as good as in some jurisdictions, including the UK, but it was a step forward, and I know only too well, having tried to find information from government, that it is very difficult.
Can you name and shame? Can you tell us what information you were looking for?
Well, I tried to find some information out about the podiatry clinic and the health service, and also TV licensing and how the money was spent there. And in some cases, I don't even get a reply.
Well,
David did reply to a letter I sent to him, so I'm not condemning, but his own department did not reply to my queries.
It's a pity you hadn't raised that with me before tonight.
Matthew Wadsworth, you in particular say you want more transparency in things like tendering processes, but would that really work in the Isle of Man? Sometimes it just isn't practical to tell everyone everything.
It's not about telling everyone everything. That is an important part of our government processes, communication. And there is lots of things that happen within government that we don't communicate about. So if you look at the tendering process, the government rolled out an audit process right across all government bodies, but cannot explain what the actual tendering process and what they were asked to tender on. So how are we expecting our commissioners, our pool boards to know if the auditors have done a good job if they don't know what the criteria are? It's just basic communication. If you don't have communication, you have frustration and disengagement.
I just want to pick up on something else that came out of this, and that seems to be the difference of opinion about the way you intend to keep in touch with the electorate if you are successful. Geoffrey Boot, Matthew Wadsworth, you both favour the idea of regular surgeries, but David Anderson, you believe that's too restrictive. I mean, Glenfaber's hardly New South Wales, is it?
Well, I believe if somebody picks the phone up to me, I can be with them within 24 hours. It's worked very well in the past. People are happy with that because they can pick the phone up. They can come to me, I can go to them. I'm not restricting them to once a month in a particular place. It's something that's worked well, and if I'm elected, that's what I'll continue to do.
Geoffrey Boot?
I'm not sure why David sees the two mutually exclusive. I mean, if I'm elected, I'm going to be available. I'll communicate with the newsletter, I'll hold the surgeries, but I'll still be available to go and see people, and I'll answer the phone. So it's a combined process.
Matthew Wadsworth?
I agree with Geoffrey on this one. I think the time of how we interact with people has changed. You know, our lives change, and you know, there's people like myself that work full time that don't have the time to wait for calls in the evenings. And a point where you can just drop in and speak to somebody and you know they're going to be there, I think is something that people are looking
for. An outdated approach then, Mr. Anderson?
Well, I think it's worked very well the last 10 years. People are happy with it. I'm available. I can, you know, I don't have to be given a date a month ahead to meet me. I can meet them with a drop of a hat. It's worked well, and I'll continue to do that if re-elected.
And final word on this.
But I was just going to say, there are some people that don't like picking up the phone. They don't, and they're not very good at writing letters, and they don't have email. So a drop-in is, you know, the ideal solution.
Very quickly, I just want to ask you all the question we've been asking everyone. Are you all favour contributing to your own pension?
Affirmative.
Beth, you know that's going to happen anyway.
We're approaching the end of the programme, so let's just hear from each of you in turn about why you deserve the vote on September the 29th. David Anderson.
Well, I am your local candidate. I have demonstrated in my ministerial roles that I am up to making these tough decisions, and will continue to do so with the good of the community and individuals at heart. And I will be, as ever, do this without fear or favour.
Geoffrey Boot.
Well, first of all, thank you to the people of Glenfaber for the warm welcome on the doorstep. I really believe we need change. Continue to vote the same way as last time, and we will simply get more of the same. I hope in 2006 and over the last 9 months, I've demonstrated a willingness to communicate, rebuild local links, and an enthusiasm to work with the community, as well as working on a serious national
agenda.
Matthew
Wadsworth.
I think it's time for change as well. We need people with proper business skills, youth and drive, and family concerns to drive our economy and our island forward.
Well, thank you to all of us for joining me today. You can find out more about the election by visiting Manx Radio's dedicated website. That's election.manxradio.com. Today's programme was produced by Catherine Nicol and Mark Tiley. Roger Watterson will be here on Thursday with the candidates standing in Maloo and Santon. I'll be back on Friday with those from Michael. Until then, goodbye.